things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that. There's right so now, much that is happening now that we're going to talk about. And then some of the history we have is because
Boom. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. You won't want to miss Thursday. As we've told you, there's a big transition going on in my wife and I and our family's life. And so Thursday will be a final episode for the Joe and Doug Show. Until Joe comes and visits me in Buffalo or I come back and we'll throw one up as a throwback episode and do one. But in the next season. And we're both going on vacation for a bit. Yep. We both leave Friday. We're not going to the same place. I'm going to the beach.
Or are we?
I'm going to the beach with seagulls and the Jersey Shore boardwalk and really skinny pizza and Core Brothers ice cream and all that sort of stuff. And you are headed to
rocks and dirt and nature.
And desert.
And desert. Yeah, it's going to Colorado and checking out Yellowstone.
Nice.
Now, taking out a buffalo or two.
Now, it's not Yellowstone like the TV show Yellowstone.
Maybe it is, man. I love that show. So I might just get a little property out there in the middle of nowhere and set up my own village.
Yeah. So I thought it would be Thursday. What we'll have some fun with this and we'll talk. I went back and looked at some of our first ever episodes that we did that were awful. Then you go back and look at them and just
by today's standards,
by what we're doing now, and just I remember having notes in some of those first episodes and I wanted to hit certain things, and especially I'm sure you have footage of when we did it like in that closet at the church and they have one light pointing up the ceiling and it was so dark.
Yeah, it looked like one of those somebody who didn't want their identity to be known.
It was like a Bin Laden cave video.
Yeah, right.
Attempting our first run at podcast was at the end of 2019, I think. Yeah.
Yep.
So doing this for a bit. And but I thought it would only be appropriate for us to touch on two subjects that we touch on all the time. But for us to hit it one more time as to talk a little about faith and some of the law of attraction stuff. I ran into a quote earlier today that really struck me. And it's a Tony Robbins quote. And he essentially says in the quote that, well, I'll just read it. As soon as you truly commit to making something happen, the how will reveal itself.
Absolutely, 100%.
And I agree with that sentiment, but I want to flesh that out for people because it's as soon as you have the faith to do something and you've commit yourself and this is what we're going to do, the how will reveal itself. Now that, for some people, is a wrestle because
for sure.
They want to know the how before they commit to doing it.
Right.
And we deal with these people all the time. And sometimes that can be that way. But faith doesn't work that way.
Right.
So how does Joe navigate that type of quote? We know it's true, but there are times where you're like, you know, if I had a few more details, I'd feel more comfortable doing this. But you still step out even without the how. How do you help the folks around you? Because I know some of them really wrestle with, well, you know, Joe's just swinging for it. We don't have the money for this, and we don't know where that's coming from, but yet we got to do it. And the how always develops itself.
Yeah, and it's posturing. It's like setting your – not just your mentality. Like, we'll always say that we want something to happen. And if I tell people, like, if you weren't allowed to talk to me and I could just read your actions, I can tell whether or not you're preparing for something or you're not.
Yep.
And when you put yourself in that vein where you start to prepare, you do completely different things than when you're waiting for more details or more information to come along, like your defensive position versus offensive. You know defensive posture, what it looks like, and you know definitely what an offensive posture looks like.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, in the midst of buying and selling our house right now, buying a house in New York and selling a house here, you know, there's a whole lot of things we can't control. I can't control the market. I can't control the value of the house. I can't control realtors. There are a whole bunch of things I can't control. But I said to Sam, you know, if we're posturing and positioning ourselves as somebody that sell the house, like we need to continue to box stuff up. We need to continue to pack. Like the garage needs to be filled with totes. Basement needs to be empty. And so, you know, we're trying to, for our faith, put our faith into action each night. You know, we're going to pack 3 or 5 totes each night and get them in the garage, get them set up. And at some level, people are like, well, how's that going to sell your house? Well, it's positioning our house to be sold. It's positioning us to live somewhere else. And so we're just adding our, we're putting our faith into practice. And then the day where that's right and it all lines up, and it comes in, everyone go, oh, you know, now it happened. It's going to happen at just the right time. It's going to be the right buyer. It's going to be the right thing. There's going to be the right house in New York. But ultimately, you know, you put your faith into action and then it comes along and then luck happens, right? You prep right. for that opportunity and at the right time, it comes in. The how kind of,
well, let me change some of the nouns and verbs. Cause a sure. lot of time this feels like a mysterious pursuit rather than a something on the physical side. So you invest in whatever, like you think of investments as you put your money yep. and let somebody else worry about it. Real investment is when you're buying into an outcome that you want to happen. Investment mm-hmm. is a slow investment of things over a period of time. So if I say, I'll use my running thing, right? If I say that I want to run a 5K, I will invest in things that make it more likely that I'm going to run a 5K.
Yep.
Or if you look at what I buy and do and, mm-hmm. and it, the less likely that it is. So whatever you're investing in, giving yourself that 1% better chance that something's going to happen, you're changing the tumblers that lead to a certain thing.
Yeah. So when you function on projects in the same way at work, you know, a lot of times, you know, boss comes in and says, hey, we're going to do fill in the blank. And the employees know immediately, all right, he's saying we're going to do that, but his actions are not lining up with us being right. able to do that. And sometimes that's the tension between the vision casting and the outcome or the output of that vision taking place. And especially when you're on a team, to get to a place where you can realistically go, hey, that's what we're going to do. Sometimes you don't, like, that's the last thing you have to do is say it. Because everybody's watching, they go, oh, well, that's obvious we're going to do that. We already hired this person. We already positioned this. We've already made an investment there. And we bought this equipment. Well, duh, that's what we're going to do.
Right.
And I think that's the best, in my opinion, that's some of the best type of vision. It's not the Hail Mary style of, hey, you know, we have this. And there's a place for big, broad stroked vision. But ultimately, the best type of vision, in my opinion, leaks. You know, people get excited about it and it's incremental. It's those 1% things. It's, hey, we bought a 3D printer. You know, we hired a technical person to operate it and now we're going to sell X, Y, and Z. And as you're doing each of those pieces and you're letting people play with the 3D printer and, you know, and you're shopping around for the right person, as all of those things come into alignment and then you print your first thing off, even if it's bad, everybody's excited because you've done these little things.
Right.
You know, I can remember starting at Bridge of Hope. My father-in-law told me, he's like, just change one thing every week. And he's like, it doesn't have to be a huge thing, but change one thing. So like I bought a new pulpit and he's like, it's small. He goes, just go change the furniture in the lobby. He's like, it's small, but it indicates to everybody change is coming.
Yep.
It starts to put your faith into practice that, hey, we're going to make some significant moves here down the road, but I don't have to do it all today. You know, I took all the hymnals out of the pews because I was like, it just dates the room, you know, and we're putting it up on the screen anyway. You know, if we're going to sing those songs, they're going up on the screen. And so I did some of those small things in the beginning. And it's funny looking back, Sam, and I've been kind of compiling pictures and reminiscing a little bit. I'm like, wow, you know, you don't realize where the church started and where it's come in, you know, almost 9 years. But I like looking back just at the pictures and I'm going, holy smokes. You know, we did this and this. Oh, that seemed like such a small thing to fix that room or to paint that thing. But each of those little incremental things now everybody looks at and goes, wow, look at the church that's here. But that doesn't happen unless I buy a new pulpit. That doesn't happen unless you do the small thing. And so in the way that quote's set up, it's like, hey, if you're truly committed to doing this, the how revealed, like I didn't know that in 3 years I was going to have to hire this person and we were going to change. But the how revealed itself because we committed to doing this over the long haul. What are some of those examples for you in your space where you were like, I committed to doing that, and then the how revealed itself?
So I wanted to say before I answer that. Yeah. So our vision boards, we talk about those mm-hmm. a lot. And most of the time, like there are two types of people. There are people that like us, that we see vision. We talk about yep. things a certain way. We can paint a picture even if it doesn't exist. And then you sort of have everybody else. And I don't want to make fun of those other people, but they sure. really struggle
yeah.
with being able to see what isn't yet, but you know what you're referring to it as yeah, if yeah. it is. So most of the time, Like when I'll pull an idea off of the vision board, it's more for me than anybody else, because I went a day yesterday trying to get something to manifest and it didn't. I got to go back there and take it back off again so I can be recommitted to something I said I was going to do. If you're around me and you see me take the same thing down, you'd think I was a little crazy saying, you know, referring to something with such substance that doesn't even, you know, really exist. But you know, part of that process is being stubborn enough to be able to, you know, not get down on yourself and not feel bad at or have regret that somehow yesterday was came up blanks, but today you're gonna, you know, shoot that thing again. But I'm in always in such a state of flux when it comes to these ideas because not all of them are perfectly timed.
Sure.
Sometimes you take it down and say, you know, I really don't have the cash for it, but I need the cash for it. So I need to put the cash for it up on the board and keep assembling ingredients so all of them come to fruition.
Yeah. You know, you used a word there. You said that, you know, you talk about it as if it's substantive or has substance to it. I mean, it reminds me of a scripture, Joe.
I was on it.
That in Hebrews 11, it says, faith is the substance of things hoped for, a certainty of things not yet seen. And I love that definition of faith. It there's substance to faith. You know, when we talk about things that aren't here yet as though they are, we're giving substance to them. When we position ourselves with the 3D printer or we buy the studio before it's a studio and you name it a studio, you're giving substance to things hoped for. And I think that's a really powerful tool. You know, sometimes we talk so, you know, deep or theological or whatever about faith, but faith is very practical and it's very down to earth. It has, you know, flesh to it. It has, you know, substance to it. And I think if people would understand that, it makes things more tangible. It's like, all right, well, I want to start that business. Well, I need to do this, this, and this. Well, all right. Faith has a substance to it. So how are you going to create substance? And you create something out of nothing. And you do that with not just your thoughts, because as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. But you do it with your actions. If your actions, you know, a lot of people have dreams, they have wishes and all of that. And I often say it this way, you know, a dream hopes to, a vision plans to, and a vision has faith with substance to it. The other is just like, well, you know, if it ever happens, that'd be so great. You know, I'd love to, you know, if I ever won the lottery, I would. Those are dream items. And we often get that confused because you can dream whatever you want. But if you're really doing a vision board and planning stuff out, you're going to give substance to your faith and it's going to be tangible. You're going to be able to touch it and hold it.
Right. All right. So I asked this question to my guys. So let's kind of like, it kind of fits in here a little bit. So if we're not that kind of person that easily buys into the visionary, you're a person that needs it to be revealed before you decide to start investing, you know, in it. So I asked my guys, like, are you the type that are, if you have a chance, we'll use gifts for instance. So if you have, you know, 50 gifts, would you rather open them all at one time? Or would you rather open a gift and then wait and then open another gift and wait and keep doing that process over a period of time? And the personality types revealed themselves that there are certainly people who are like, I'm jumping on the pile. I am opening everything. And then I'm just going to lay back in the tryptophan, you know, whatever, and enjoy it. And then I had one person that said that they like a little bit of both. There are certain things that they like to, you know, hold back on and not fully go. And I am the one that will set the tempo and I'll stick to the tempo and I'll keep myself under control as I roll through those, you know, different benchmarks between I go things. So what's your personality type?
So it's interesting. Sam and I have this debate every Christmas. You know, she just wants to turn the kids loose and just let them rip gifts open and have fun. And there's some fun to that. But I grew up in a house where we got one gift at a time. And so it kind of naturally paced you anyway. I think it depends on the season I'm in. Some seasons, gifts are coming so quickly. It's like, man, if I don't open them, they're going to pass me by. And so I'm tearing in and it's awesome. And then other seasons, it's more rhythmed. And then other season, it's more scarce. And so you have to rely on the gifts you've already received. So for me, I think it's more seasonal. I don't necessarily...
All right, let me change the nouns and verbs because this might get another different answer.
Yeah.
Let's just say you got an endowment from someone to rehab a church that was falling apart, which meant that the entire rehab.
How much are you giving me, Joe?
The whole rehab can be done like that.
Yeah.
Would you stage it so that on a regular basis you could have something to open?
Yeah.
Or would you just rip through it and get it all done?
No, you'd have to lay it out in phases. Three reasons. One, people respond better to phases than all at once, it would be like traumatic to upturn everything for 2 years while you gut everything and redo it. It would be far wiser to incrementally, hey, we're going to tackle this area and do that area really well. And then you're able to put it on display. And honestly, when people see things being done well, they want to get involved, they want to serve. And so from that, it's got to be done that way. For the people's sake, for the leadership's sake, the people that are involved actually implementing those changes, you want to space that out and do phase 1, 2, 3, 5.
Well, the reason that this is a practice is because all of the blessings in that are going to happen with different things and at different stages. And so if you rush through all of that change that could happen like a nuclear bomb, then you don't get to experience the people and the things that are spawn offs from that. So what you mentioned is all very logistics, but as far as like from a law of attraction standpoint, you don't waste the entropy that's built into those changes by doing them all too soon, because you don't realize any of the benefits in them as they happen.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And I think, you know, when you talk about, you know, manifesting something like that, or when you talk about a huge project, you know, pace is one of those things that's important, even to faith. Like even when you look at real high capacity leaders and people that are spinning, you know, 17 plates at one time, there's still a rhythm and a cadence to their world. They may be more efficient at certain things. They may put certain things on autopilot. You talk about that all the time. Like if I can automate it, great. You know, if I can, you'll love this.
Like another script.
No. You got excited. There'll be another one in a little bit. But there's a neighbor of mine, like just down the end of the street. So, you know, the vacuums that go around your house and, you know, vacuum your house for you.
Robotic ones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have Roberto is the name of ours.
Right.
Kids love Rob. And Rob takes care of about 80%. He doesn't do a perfect job, but, you know, it's 80%. And then we can run a vacuum over or whatever. But it's great, like at night, put the kids to bed, turn him on, let him go. We can go watch Netflix or whatever. We don't have to spend 20 minutes moving chairs and all that sort of stuff. He goes under everything. It's wonderful. Well, my neighbor, like 5 or 6 down the end of the street, they have a robotic lawnmower I have seen. And now I looked it up online. It's like, I don't know, like $1,500, but it learns your yard and, you know, it's got a dock and all that sort of stuff. I don't know.
No kidding.
I see it all the time and I'm like, you know, you probably pay, I don't know, $40 or $50 a cut for somebody to come and do that. Or you spend 2 hours yourself cutting, bagging, weed whacking, taking a Zyrtec because my eyes are, you know, watering, all that sort of stuff. You know, so you look at that trade-off and it's like, well, you know, if I spend $1,500 on this and you do Joe's spreadsheet and you map it out, I'm like, you know, it's all electric. So it doesn't require me to get gas and get my hands smelling like gas, but, you know, pouring in the lawnmower. And, you know, his lawn is always perfect. And I'm like, that thing is cool. But it goes back to your principle of, man, he can automate that. I'm sure, you know, for $1,500, I'm sure there's an app or he's programmed it in some way that it, you know, does the front lawn and it takes him however long. Now, it's not going as fast as your lawnmower because it's, you know, it's bigger than a vacuum, but it's not as big as your ride-on lawnmower. So,
but you're not doing anything.
Right. It's so it doesn't matter if it takes five hours. Like, who cares?
Right.
And it could do it in the middle of the night. Like, that's
cool.
Super cool. And so just looking at some of those sort of things, you know, when you automate them, you free yourself up then to do the things that are most important to you.
That's the practice right there. 100%.
So when you get into a big project like that, or you get into this gift season, do you ever automate the process of opening your blessings?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like most of the best things happening when you're not paying attention to what used to be the payoff, like you're going to the destination and it's the Bahamas, but everything, like, I mean, this is so cliche in the world, but it really is. When you stop thinking about the payoff, you're paying attention to, like, I behaved differently and I thought differently and this came to me differently. And all of these different things were possible if you'd stop paying attention to the end zone.
Well, and I think it's the same thing in leadership for people that are leading companies or even in our house. So like we have house showings that pop up and we have to clean the house. Now, would it be easiest and fastest? Everybody needs to do something. Now, does that always happen best for my 4-year-old to make his bed? No. But you know what? If I can delegate and I can train and I can show them how to, this is how the room needs to look. It's amazing how quickly they do just as good a job as I did. And so our house is done. We had a showing Sunday, 10 a.m. while we're at church. So we had to get up Sunday morning, not only to have to get ready for church and shower, get all the kids ready and get to the church, but we had to have the house perfect. We had to get the dog somewhere. And thank God for good friends. The Gleghorns took the dog Saturday night while they were over the house, and she got to have a sleepover with their puppy. And we just got to get up and straighten the house. But the kids were amazing. You know, Sam's in the shower. I'm getting dressed. They're like, Dad, made my bed, picked the Legos up. Like, we didn't have to. I just popped my head in their room, and I automated that process.
That's so cool.
But the same thing happens when you go into an organization, whether you have 10 people working for you or 5 people working for you or 50 people. Like, if you do a good job of setting the right culture and training people, Joe doesn't have to fix every computer that comes in a Youngstown computer. Right. Joe doesn't have to manage every event that comes through Youngstown Studio. Like, those are the sort of things that leaders understand is, like, we can do more and have greater impact, and we can have a greater fruitfulness by taking the time to invest in those people so that they'll do, so that we can automate the job, and that job gets done as if I'm doing it.
Right. And one thing you got to pay attention to, like, we started about talking about faith. So some of the elements in judging whether or not you truly are following faith or mm-hmm. you're not, is we talk about fear, uncertainty, and doubt on a yep. regular basis, and keeping your doubt in check. So if I made a proclamation that I think money is infinite, right? I would say, hey, if you wanted to judge whether or not I really believe that, ask me how many times I check my bank account. Because if I believe it's infinite, I probably check every once in a while, make sure my mower doesn't go rogue and cut the other thing. But for the most part, I don't really need to check it every day. Now, if every day I was fussing over every penny that went in and every penny that went out, and I was looking at it 4 times a day, you'd be like, didn't you say that the money was kind of infinite here? Yeah. I'm not really buying it. But you can use that as your sort of like North Star, you know, for whether or not you're believing what you're saying. If it's coming out of your mouth and you're not, your actions aren't supportive of it, then you need to work on that.
Well, and it's interesting that the amount of faith shift, like, you know, I had faith in the beginning of this housing process, like, man, we're in a good spot. This is great. Great market. Now stuff slowed. And I'm like, all right, Lord.
Well, let's reverse your last one. Same. It'll be the same result.
Exactly.
You were doubting at the beginning
yep.
and faith came in.
Yep.
Here you had so faith much faith and faith,
it's stretching, and it's so funny too, because it ebbs and flows with my wife. Like, she was having a hard time with stuff in the beginning, and now I'm like, oh, I wanted this to be done before I went on vacation. I didn't want to have to worry about, like, my head's in that headspace. And she's the one that's like, you know what? It's going to be fine. The right house is going to be there and all this stuff. And I'm like, who are you? And what'd you do with my wife? Like, you know, in that sense. But I love the teamwork of that, because when I hit certain spaces, she's able to pick up. But it's true that just because you start out with a declaration and big faith in the beginning doesn't mean that.
So what would you, let's just say that your house was already sold.
Yeah.
Would you be doing anything different today than this going forward if it was already sold than you're doing right now? Is there anything more you can add to the ingredients list? You're just behaving going forward. Okay. All right.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the whole thing. And we had this conversation the other day. I was like, you know, I was a little frustrated with the process and some of the stuff. And I said, you know, but I said, realistically, you know, we're praying about it the same way we prayed about it. We're packing the boxes at the same rate. All right. We can pack boxes a little bit faster. Like, but realistically, like, we're going at the end of July. Regardless. Now, I don't know what that's going to look like, and I don't know where that's going to be, but that's all, you know, God's figured it out. We just have to, you know, treasure hunt and find out where that X is and dig.
Have you gone through the, how, you know, if you get to the day where you're supposed to leave and your house hasn't sold yet, where are you going to be mentally and what are you going to be thinking and the what ifs in that situation?
Yeah, no, we have not tagged.
Like,
I mean,
what if that is what's supposed to happen? Yeah, and there are things tagged to that, you know,
there are a bunch of things tagged. I mean, we have a plan, but, that's not going to happen, Joe.
No, it's not. But suggesting it. Sees how your brain responds to that and see if you're really bought in or you're just waiting for the doubt to hit you. And then it's going to snap like a trap, you know?
You know, it's funny. I've wrestled with, you know, the fact that when I first sat down with our realtor and I said, you know, I want to sell the house. He said, well, how much you want to make out of it? I said, I just really need to make a nice down payment. That was what I said. That was the declaration I made.
There you go.
And then he was like, well, you know, in the market. Now we're coming out of May where the market was crazy. He's like, the market will slow down, but he goes, I think if we jump on this, we have an opportunity to maybe sell your house for a good chunk here. And so we listed, and our strategy was to drop the price a little bit if we didn't get bites in those first little bit. And now we're at a spot where I'm like, all right, originally, we were here, but now I'm like, I guess I'm just going to get my original declaration. That's so dumb. but it's true. It comes out of your mouth, and what's in your heart really ends up, reflecting into your world.
Man, I really wish I could do that. Think of that Napoleon Hill poem about the, you set the price, and I'm going to have to find it. I'm going to post it on this video after we hit it, because it's so fitting.
Yeah, I was packing my books and my I was packing my books in the living room, and I grabbed my copy of Think and Grow Rich, which I haven't read in a bit, and I was like, oh, maybe I should dust this thing off and read it again. It's been probably 18 months since I did it, but you got the poem?
I'm getting there. Maybe this is it.
If you haven't read Think and Grow Rich, Joe and I've done several episodes on that, and it's a great book for you to dive into.
It goes right in line with what we're talking about
100%
today.
And Joe's actually taught classes on it, and I had bought a copy of it, and we were standing in his kitchen, and I was like, I got this book. I think you'd love it. I was hearing people talk about it on Instagram and TikTok, and he goes, do I love it? And he goes in the back, he goes, that's a crappy copy of that, because that's new and updated. You got to have the original. And he goes in the back and pulls out, he had a box of books, and apparently gives them away and all that.
Oh yeah.
And loves
life changer.
Yeah. So you got it?
Yes. I bargained with life for a penny, and life would pay no more. However, I begged at evening when I counted my scanty store. For life is a just employer. He gives you what you ask. But once you set the wages, why, you must bear the task.
Mm. It's true.
For sure. So you got to be, when you set that original amount, like, you got to be, because it's honestly, your brain has to work itself around what you're willing to give for what you ask for. Because this is an action game where you get motivated and you start doing things. Your intuitions tell you what you should be doing. And you have to, once you set that and you say, I want to be on every stage. You know what life hands you right up on stage? It does not give you the most polished version of what you asked for. It says, huh, I want to see if you're serious about what you just asked for. Here's a stage with some banana peels that smells funny in front of two people. Go, right?
And you got here's a podcast and a church closet.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's where it always starts, to see, like, because the dressed up version, it would have you, and then you would be totally willing to walk through those doors. The worst version is going to say, are you serious? Are you really willing to give what it takes to be able to get there? And the short versions, usually, like, it's going to take me 30 days. Oh, well, we could do 30 days. What about the ones that are like years? What if like the year is what your commitment level, or decade is what your commitment level? Those are the big ones.
No, it's true. And it's wild to watch those things take shape, because you start so small in some of these things. They're so minute, and you think, like, how am I ever going to do this for a living, or how is this ever going to play out in my life, or whatever. And then, you fast forward 10 years, 20 years, and it's like, wow, I'm so glad I made that goofy decision here, because it's let me do this, and this. And I think that's so special.
So when you look at it, a lot of these really good things, I think that time is actually running backwards, because think about, like, if you knew what day you were going to die, you can orient yourself and your spreadsheet yourself better, so that you take most advantage of those days that are new. So if I could tell you the exact day that your house was going to sell, then you wouldn't have to put yourself through this deal about feeling a certain way when it's already known how it's going to happen. Yeah. It just hasn't been revealed to you, because this is sort of a test of your, what you're made of.
It's interesting that you say it that way. So George, who is the chair of the board and going to lead the pulpit committee now as we step out to find a new pastor. And his first response to me when we were talking about it, he goes, God already knows who the next pastor is going to be. We just have to figure it out.
That's exactly right.
And it was so, like, matter of fact, and that's the way he did it to the congregation. There's a little chuckle, but that's the truth of it. Like, it's going to happen. And it's the same thing. I remember my mom, when I was in high school, I wanted a car in the worst way. And she got a 2001 white leather seat Chevy Impala. It was nice. Now, this is 2002. So it's like brand new car for her, it's heated seats. She's all excited. And I get what was a hand-me-down from my grandfather to me, 1986 Buick Century with
Yes.
200,000 miles on
yes,
it or whatever.
That's the good stuff.
And right I had the car for like a week. It was in bad shape and it was on its last legs. Yeah. And so I was, my best friend in high school, John had a Monte Carlo, you know, I think it was an 86 or 87 and it was white with the, you know, it was sweet. And he drove us to school and then he was like, hey, I got to have tires put on the car or something or brake work done or whatever. So he's like, now that you got your mom's car, can you drive us? I was like, sure. I was all pumped, you know, I got my 86 Buick brown as poop. I mean, it was just ugly. And I pick him up and he's like, there's something wrong with your car. And it's like, as we're driving down the road. And so we get to school, he's all embarrassed. But we both had work that afternoon. We worked at Wawa, hallelujah. And so we left school. I think we got out of school 2:15 and we had to be at Wawa by 3 o'clock, our shift started. We're driving home and we turn on the street. We're like 2 miles from my house and Wawa's right down the corner. And the car's going, and it just goes, ka-tsh.
Oh no.
And it just died. And so I call my dad, I call my mom. I'm trying to get somebody to come pick us up. I'm like, we could walk to work, but I got to stop home and get changed. And so we're trying to figure it all. My dad finally comes and picks us up. We leave the car there on the side of the road and literally the piston had cracked the engine block. It was done. It was over. And it was super interesting. But I say all that to say this, you know, so I had the car and I was like, oh, I had the car for a couple of weeks, whatever. It was super embarrassing because it was loud, obnoxious, and it was just a piece of junk at that point. And I remember saying to my mom, like, I want to buy a car. You know, fast forward, you know, senior year, I want to buy a car. And my buddy had a 1999 Chrysler Cirrus. It was like a grandma mobile. Mm. It was like leather seats, but it's sunroof, but it felt kind of regal a little bit, even okay. though it was like grandma-esque, grandpa-esque. Great. And, you know, a lot of my buddies had, you know, sporty cars. That was never me. I was like, man, this car just feels rich. It just felt that way. And I was like, you know, if I could ever buy a car, I'd love to have a Chrysler Cirrus. Like, it's really nice. And I'd ridden in it a couple times with them. And I remember saying to my mom, I want a car. Okay. She's like, listen, God already has your car picked out. He knows how much it's going to cost you. He knows what lot we're going to walk onto when we find out. She's like, just take a deep breath. We will get you a car before you go off to college. Fine. So about after Easter, went to a couple spots and looked. There was nothing. A buddy's dad of mine was a sales guy at one of the, and we went there and he's like, I got this Pontiac Sunfire for like $180 a month. And it was like a total chick car. It needed like, you know, pink dice in the mirror and stuff. And I drove it and I was close because the price was really good. And I was getting so frustrated. I was like, Mom, you know, I'm never going to find a car that, you know, works. And I don't want junk. I'm going, you know, an hour away to school. I need to be able to drive back and forth. My mom kept saying, God's already got your car picked out. We're going to walk on the lot and you're going to know. And don't you know, it was middle of July. I'm leaving for school in less than 3 weeks. I've been trying to find a car since April. I'm miserable because I haven't been able to find a car. And you know, my parents were super gracious and let me borrow their cars to do the things I need to do. But my mom kept saying to me all summer, God's got the car picked out. Don't worry. It's going to be the right one. And I walk on this lot looking around.
Here it comes.
We're looking every which way. And I don't see anything that I really like. And this is one SUV that I was like, but you know, my mom's like, that's going to be a lot in gas. And I just wasn't excited about anything. And we turned to go get in the car and leave. And it's a small, like talking like 40 cars on the lot. Like it was a used car lot. It was not like, you know, your typical dealership. And we turned to leave and there's this car pulls up and doesn't even have any, it hasn't even been prepped. It's dirty on the outside, whatever, but it's a 99 Chrysler Cirrus silver. And I was like, and the guy was like, I didn't really see anything I like. I was like, is that your car? Or is that going to be for sale? He goes, we just bought it. He goes, I have to get it cleaned up because I don't even know what we're going to sell it for. He goes, why don't you give me a couple hours and come back? So they get it all cleaned up or whatever. Check it out. I think they sold it to me for like $7,800 or something like that. And, but it had all the fixings that I wanted, the leather seats, the whole deal. I got in, I was like, this is the one. And mom was like, see, I told you, God had your car picked out. You just had to wait for the right time, the right moment.
Do you know how many times I hear that story with people? So I could ask you two questions then. Now, people get in the state that they're going to be in control and they're going to make something happen. That's why they get stubborn about it and say that they're. So how many times, I'm going to ask you both sides of this.
Yeah, yeah.
How many times do you think you thwarted what was supposed to be and made something happen that wasn't in the cards for you? You did it. It wasn't supposed to happen. Probably not often.
Yeah, not often, but I think even when you do that, it was the thing that was supposed to happen.
But I'm saying, like, if you wanted to push beyond that and do something wasn't, very unlikely that you're going to have the grit or whatever to carry it there.
Yeah.
Now, other side of that, how often do you think you get in your own way and make something that's supposed to happen
all
take
the time.
Forever?
The time.
So where do you want to invest? Do you want to practice getting out of your own way taking controls of the universe?
I had a professor in Bible school that said the key to life, he's like, we're all like someone swimming in the ocean and we're struggling to make it back to shore and we're drowning and we're waving for a lifeguard and the lifeguard swims up to us and we all panic and try and drown the lifeguard. And he goes, the key in life is just to stop kicking and let the lifeguard pull you in. Now, he was making a spiritual analogy to what God does in that case, but I find that to be true in almost every decision. I'm like, you know, if I could just swim a little harder. I mean, if you get in the undertow, you're in the undertow. Like, just swim alongside until you get a break in it so you can come in. But when you get worn out like that, the key is just stop kicking.
Yeah, because you get stop scared. Fighting.
Yep.
You have fear. You have uncertainty. And doubt. When those visit, that's what you do. So 100%. In that moment, if you can find a way to short circuit your brain's ability to say you're going to overcome something that's overcomable. Mm. Is that even a word?
No.
Overcomable.
We can make it up. We talk for a living.
You go say, you know what? Let's not get in my own way on this one.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing. Staying out of your own way, the fear, uncertainty, and doubt, and allowing the right buyer to come to our house and just keep doing the things you know to do. And God's already got the buyer
picked
out.
And your Chrysler Sierra will come right to you.
It will. It will. And eventually I sold it to my brother. So it was good. Well, this was good. And I'm pumped for Thursday. My wife and kids are going to be there. We're going to be, I know we're not doing crazy promo, but Joe and I will be at Double Bogeys hanging out. And Youngstown Studio is going to attempt to broadcast from there live. And we're going to have some fun for our final episode together. Right. So I hope you join us
Thursday, probably somewhere in the 6 o'clock range.
Cool.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the